to our one listener. I'm imagining that one person has found our podcast that isn't an acquaintance or relative of ours.
Unlikely, but maybe.
If you have found this podcast and you are not an acquaintance or relative of ours, if you don't know us in some way and you find this podcast, feel free to email contact@tallcast.org and tell us that you have found this. I'm going to preemptively also say, if this podcast becomes successful and you are listening to an older podcast of this now successful podcast, do not email us at that email.
Go ahead address. And email us with as many of the movies from our logo that you can recognize. Anyone can do that.
No cheating.
What, like asking us?
No cheating, like Googling images. Okay, it'd be tricky. It would be tricky.
That would take a lot of work. Okay. I don't think anyone cares that much.
That's true. Several of them are very difficult. One of them is nearly impossible.
Which one's that?
The second one. That one is really tricky.
One of them is a video game.
One of them is a video game. It's an Easter. Try to figure out which one that is. Thunderman calling through the faraway towns. Now war is declared and battle come down. Thunderman calling to the underworld. Come out of the cupboard, you boys and girls. London calling, now don't look to us. Phony Beatlemania is putting the dust. London calling, see we ain't got no swing except for the rain and the crunch of thing. The ice is coming, the sun's zooming in. Meltdown expected, the wheat is going in. Engines stop running, but I have no fear, 'cause London is drowning.
So that was London Calling by The Clash, which is from Die Another Day, as promised. Zach and I this week are up in the woods, Bon Iver style. Currently we're sitting in a camper.
Trailer.
Okay. We're sitting in a trailer on island.
Whoa there with the personal information.
Sorry.
On an island.
On an island in...
Whoa there, on an island in Washington.
Okay, Zach and I are... We're not camping.
We're not camping.
No. But we're away from our regular homes. And we decided that that's not enough to keep us from making our podcast. So, last night before we fell asleep, we watched Sahara.
Before Tom fell asleep. Before. Actually, Tom may have fallen asleep.
I did not
asleep.
Fall asleep during the film.
Tom always falls asleep in the middle of films. This aspiring film student cannot handle the full length of a film.
Okay, that's only if I have seen the movie before.
It's not always true.
And or it's uninteresting.
You fell asleep in the middle of Blade Runner.
I fell asleep in the beginning of Blade Runner.
And 2001. Did you fall asleep in the middle of 2001?
No. I've seen that. I saw that with you. Blade Runner, I wanted to watch so bad, but I was so tired, and I fell asleep in the first 5 minutes, and I still haven't gotten back around to watching it, so, whoops.
Well, that's disappointing.
I'll get there.
Hold on. Okay.
Last night, Zach and I meant to watch the film and make our podcast for the week, but instead, I said, dude, I can't do it, I'm falling asleep.
Tom was a quitter.
So... A little bit about what we've done since we've been up here. We fished for greenling. We fished for anything, really, in the cove. And we only caught greenling. No, you caught
I caught a sculpin. A sculpin.
It was really cool looking.
They are cool looking.
I wanted to catch anything besides a greenling because last year when we came here, I caught greenling. So I thought it'd be cool to...
Oh, how disappointing.
Once again.
I caught the fish we were trying to catch. Oh, no, I succeeded.
That's a good
point. What a disappointment.
Actually, fishing's hard, man.
It is. There's a lot.
Today was a test in patience.
And effort. Mixed. It was a off and on.
Yeah.
That's what fishing is like.
You know. Yeah, it's really a fun day, though. We went to...
Whoa there with the locational information.
We went to another island that has a... bigger town on it.
Yes, we did.
As the island that we are on houses 200 people at any time. Didn't really do much there. We had lunch and we shopped for Zach's parents.
Yes.
Who gave us essentially a grocery list of things to get. It was fun.
I was excited.
We were going to see a movie while we were there, but the only movies in theaters, because the theater is small.
Well, there were only two movies, and I've got to say, it's a respectable theater for how large the city is, the town.
Yeah.
That they have two theaters, that they have two movies showing at once, which is kind of surprising. But the two movies that they have currently are Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, which Tom has already seen and does not want to see again.
I wouldn't mind seeing it again. I didn't want to pay to see it again.
Does not want to pay to see it again.
In theaters.
Does not want to pay to see it projected in front of him in a semi-public space once again.
Yeah.
And the other movie that's playing is the critically surprised. Like, all the critics were very surprised by this movie because they didn't show it to critics, which generally means this is a terrible movie, and it is. The new Fantastic Four. This new Fantastic Four movie.
Which we promise to watch at some point.
I want to watch this movie now, but I don't want to pay to watch it because of how terrible it apparently is. Fantastic Four is apparently so terrible that not only did they not show it to critics, but even the cast didn't see it prior to release. And this movie has to be ridiculously awful to have that sort of an issue. Prior to release, the director of the film has denounced it on Twitter. Which is not a thing that you want to do for a movie that's just released under your name, whether you made the whole thing or not. There are scenes in the trailer that aren't in the film, apparently.
Including the one where the thing.
He falls out of a plane. He
falls out of the plane. That's not in the film.
That's apparently not in the film.
And that was a big selling point on the trailer. That was like the end of the trailer. Yeah.
Speaking of misplaced budget, this week's film.
Wait, one sec.
Oh, okay.
I'd like to say that I'm kind of happy that this movie isn't doing well, isn't projected to do well. Because
it's already doing poorly.
When I found out that Fantastic Four was being remade, I was upset because the first Fantastic Four and the sequel, Rise of the Silver Surfer, came out
into like 2000.
Less than 10
years ago.
Less than 10 years ago.
Yeah, the sequel was later, but I think the first one was in
like
2005.
If you go back on like to Iron Man, how old is Iron Man?
2008.
Well, wasn't Batman Begins released in 2005? Not that that is a similar film to Fantastic Four, but it's kind of the superhero craze was starting around then. Mm-hmm. So what I thought was Fantastic Four has already had a go at this.
Fantastic Four has had its chance in theaters and did not do well enough to warrant continued sequels.
Well, yeah, first of all. And then it's just ridiculous that they're remaking it. It would be like...
if we made
another Batman film right now.
Oh, wow, that would be ridiculous. Or it'd be like if we made three Spider-Man films and then made two more and rebooted it again. That would be ridiculous. More ridiculous if after those two more, we were going to make one more again.
There weren't two more Spider-Man movies. There was only that one.
No, there were two.
No.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
I thought there was just Amazing Spider-Man.
There was The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
There
was a sequel.
Who was the bad guy?
So was Lizard Man the first one?
Yeah.
I didn't see either of them, so. There was a sequel.
There was a sequel, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It just came out.
Fairly recently. There's Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2, Spider-Man 3, and then The Amazing Spider-Man, and then The Amazing Spider-Man 2, because those movies were amazing.
Yeah. It would be like if we did that.
And then decided to make another one. It's almost like this company has a history of making weird decisions like this.
The first Fantastic Four movies weren't good. They were fine.
They were
the time.
Fantastic, though.
I hate you. They weren't good, so there's no reason to make more.
In my view, they were Fantastic Four their time.
Point is, Zach and I are sitting up here in the middle of the woods. I'm wearing a Casio Forester watch, which I don't usually wear. Earlier today, I had a knife on my belt.
Tom is a big outdoorsman. And by that, he's not.
I was piloting a kayak earlier.
Piloting. I usually turn the autopilot on my kayaks, but manual control is sometimes needed.
These aren't things that we regularly do.
These aren't things Tom regularly
does. So this isn't a show like any other that you'll hear this season. Or maybe it is the same. Maybe it's virtually indistinguishable.
This week's film was the 2005 blockbuster starring Matthew McConaughey.
And Penelope Cruz.
And Penelope Cruz.
And Rainn Wilson.
And Rainn Wilson.
And that other guy who's only in this movie.
And that other guy who reminds me but is not the same as the guy from Firefly and from Dodgeball. You know, the pirate guy from Dodgeball?
Yeah.
Those two actors. It's Steve Zahn is the guy that's in this one.
Oh, yeah.
But the other one reminds me very much of him. So the name of this movie is Sahara. And this movie is based on one of the Clive Cussler adventure novels. And it stars a main character named Dirk Pitt.
That is not his name.
His name is Dirk Pitt.
In the film?
In the film.
Matthew McConaughey's name is Dirk Pitt.
His name is Dirk Pitt. You didn't pick up on this. They called him Dirk.
What?
His name is Dirk Pitt.
Wow. He didn't need a name because he's just... His hair speaks for him. He doesn't need to be called...
Dirk Pitt.
...by a name because everyone knows who you're talking about when you say the beautiful A-list actor wandering around this film.
Steve Zahn?
Yeah.
So another thing that Tom probably doesn't know that I'm going to point out. If you notice, during this whole movie... Matthew McConaughey spends the whole time very tan and very sweaty. Very sweaty.
He just hasn't showered. He's not, you know.
He also hasn't showered. In real life and while he's acting, Matthew McConaughey does not use deodorant or antiperspirant. And other actors have complained about the smell. So I want you to realize that he was very into the character during this movie.
And he hasn't left
Dirk and he Pitt has never left since. The character since.
Oh, yeah. When Zach suggested that we watch Sahara, the Matthew McConaughey triumph, I thought, yes, that's a great one. We'll laugh the entire time because it's terrible.
I didn't expect this thought.
That didn't make sense. Zach didn't expect me to think that. I thought that it would be funny. Because it would be so bad. Then we turn on the film. And during the opening credits sequence, it was the most beautiful opening credits that I've ever seen, maybe. Maybe.
That's a big statement.
Yeah, okay, it wasn't, but it was pretty.
It was a well-made.
It looked like Fincher.
It was well-directed.
It looked awesome.
They would essentially treat an office area like a desk area, almost like a diorama, and they progressed through it historically in a way that also makes sense with the arrangement of the items on the desk.
Right, yeah.
To give a quick backstory of the characters.
It was great exposition. You know, show don't tell. This movie did a great job in the first... Well, it wasn't the first 5 minutes, because the first 5 minutes had this Civil War battle.
It was like the first minute.
No.
Oh, no. No. Yeah, that's true.
It was after that.
It was the opening credits.
Yeah.
Prior to this opening credit sequence, there is a lengthy, high-budgeted sequence in the Civil War introducing the ironclad ship. That is central to the plot of Sahara.
Becomes important later. Yeah, I mean, the animation looked really good, too. When was this movie made?
2005.
It looked great for 2005.
Apparently it's way better than, say, the modern Fantastic Four movie, for example. Just a random example.
Fantastic Four example.
After the intro to the film and the diorama sequence where they introduce the backstory of main characters, they show the one main character that did not get a backstory there.
Penelope Cruz.
Which was Penelope Cruz. And they have the one jump scare of the movie really early on.
It was in someone's house.
Yeah.
A dwelling where she was examining this person who was sick and she looked into his eye and it was gross.
This was almost a zombie movie. This was the intro to a zombie movie.
It was
movie.
Close. And then she's like, how long has he been sick? Lays him back down. And then he jumps up.
Mm.
And it's the jump scare.
She goes to a lighthouse where there are more sick people. And then a suspicious figure clothed in black, who is obviously a heroically misunderstood character, comes up behind her and attacks her with a knife. And this misunderstood man...
Why do you keep saying that?
Who obviously isn't just a shallow antagonist.
She gets away.
She gets away.
She runs away.
To help, to what seems to be help, but...
These two.
Who are tragically misunderstood. as are all of the antagonists in this movie.
She's about to be killed by them, and out of nowhere comes surfer dude Matthew McConaughey.
Well, out of nowhere comes a harpoon, which stabs through one of their hands.
Best of weapons.
It is an excellent weapon, and by excellent I mean horribly unwieldy outside of water.
It's also in Fool's Gold, Matthew McConaughey's pseudo-sequel to this
film. I have not seen that film.
We should watch it next week.
Was it a good film?
No, but I liked it. I mean, it's like this one.
I mean, there were a lot of good parts of this film, though.
Exactly. Fool's Gold was genuinely enjoyable.
From what I remember, I thought that was a romantic comedy.
It was. Yeah, no, it is.
Oh, okay.
But it's a pseudo-sequel to this film.
Are there ridiculous action set pieces?
It's like very similar to this movie.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then I might have to watch it. So this is when Matthew McConaughey makes his shining introduction. He literally has light coming from behind him, and he appears from the white
flare
light
that he comes into the frame.
And then leaves the frame from.
Yeah.
One of the main issues I had with this movie, besides its absurd plot, which was absurdly enjoyable, unlike Bond, the Bond movie that we watched previously, which I thought was not as enjoyable.
No, it wasn't. See, that's the thing about this movie, is that, like I said, I expected to laugh the entire time from how bad this movie was, because I saw it in 2005,
mm-hmm.
and I remember thinking, that was a cool movie, probably won't watch it again. So I thought, now 10 years later, me 10 years ago, I was probably not...
You're probably wrong.
Yeah, exactly. I probably didn't have a very good understanding of what makes a movie good. So I thought this movie's probably terribly bad, like a lot of things that I go back and watch that I thought were good.
I know this feeling.
And it was a good movie.
It was?
It wasn't a bad film.
I had a different impression because I didn't see this movie when it originally came out. I saw it like a year or two after. And so...
Oh, when you were old.
When I was old enough... But not really that. It was more that whenever it was on TV, I'd watch it. And so I was reminded every couple years that I actually still liked this movie. And it wasn't until somewhat recently, like a couple years ago, that I learned how big of a failure this movie was.
Really? Okay. Talk about that.
I had not seen the movie in theaters, and I didn't pay attention to it when it came out in theaters. So it wasn't until recently that I learned that this movie is considered one of the biggest blockbuster failures in recent history.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
Not because of the huge amount of money it lost, because it lost a fairly large amount of money.
It lost money?
It lost money.
It's a good movie.
It's a good movie. It made a lot of money, but it had an incredibly ludicrously high budget for what it is. It's not that they didn't have a successful release. They had a successful release. It's just they overspent on this movie so much that they were not able to make it profitable. Okay. So
pretty much Sahara is not a very interesting film to talk about.
Because it's just good.
It's just a good movie. A couple things. Penelope Cruz has a pretty much impenetrable accent. Matthew McConaughey is constantly tan, chiseled, and his hair is always wet in the movie.
Pretty much always, yeah.
Also, there's some great action. They do a couple...
The action is very
boat
good.
Boat fight scenes, which kind of come out of nowhere. There's some gun violence. They get on this train. It was all pretty good action.
They had a
There's
shootout.
A fist fight beneath a helicopter.
A fist fight, yes. On top of a tower.
There was a really good dynamic between Steve Zahn...
Yes.
...and Matthew McConaughey.
The thing about this movie that I would say differentiates it from the previous movie, from the Bond movie, is that for both movies, the premise is kind of absurd. But... The Bond movie, the execution of the premise is not all that entertaining.
Right.
But in this movie, instead of the basic idea of the scene that they were going to do, they put in how they were going to do this scene.
Right.
Like, you could tell that in the Bond movie, the action scenes were based on the idea of what the action scene would be, but not how they would film the action scene.
Like... Motion by motion.
Like motion by motion, like the cinematography involved right. in all of it. They didn't put as much thought into that as they did into the thought, we want to have a gunfight on hovercraft.
Right, yeah, okay.
Whereas in this movie, some of the action scenes were much smaller in scale, too. Right?
Yes.
Like the action scene, like if you compare the hovercraft scene in the beginning of the Bond movie with the boat action scene in this movie early on,
mm-hmm.
right? The Bond movie is slightly larger scale, too. There are more hovercraft than there are boats. There are like 4 or 5 hovercraft in that scene.
Right, yeah. And everything's like a close-up shot. You know, it's shaky cam to make it really easy to edit together. In Sahara, it was big, wide-scope shots.
Yeah, overhead shots of the scene. The action itself was choreographed. It wasn't just the idea, like in the Bond movie. The action on the hovercraft, it wasn't really that exciting, right? Mm-hmm. He just had a standard interaction. One guy had a flamethrower, but it's still just another layer of gimmick. But not the way that the action played out. He did a standard jumping away from explosion move for the flamethrower.
Right.
There was nothing all that exciting about the minutiae of that scene.
Right.
It was just the idea of it on its surface level was exciting. Whereas in Sahara, the surface level description of this is actually not as exciting as the implementation of the movie. Right? If that boat chase scene had been in a Bond movie, and they had directed it in the style that they directed the Bond movie, the
Die Another Day,
right, then it would have been one of the worst action scenes in the whole movie. It's just, it's Bond on one boat and fighting two other boats. And then later a car.
It's actually kind of fun. Rainn Wilson shot a flare gun into a pickup truck at
one point.
He did.
Yeah.
And it, yeah, that was cool.
And it worked. It was a good scene. Not only because of the action that they actually had involved, where they had well-directed shots of Matthew McConaughey hiding behind a boat and then peeking up, and they had the shot of his view peeking up. They show that the person driving the boat notices him and starts shooting at him, and he hides back again.
Right? Mm-hmm. And it was nice because the characters actually acknowledge the absurdity of the situation a few times.
They do. They lampshade the movie all over the place.
Yeah.
In this scene, I liked how they gave a reason for all of the actions that happened. Right. In a Bond movie, he will just do things, right? Everything he does works on pretty much the first try. In this movie, like in that part, Matthew McConaughey was thinking that he was going to climb up onto the boat and fight the guy, but the guy noticed him, so he went back and hid.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that Bond wouldn't do. He wouldn't
James Bond,
try something.
His plot armor is impenetrable. Yeah.
He wouldn't try something, give up, and go back to hiding.
Right.
It's a more normal reaction to this.
Something also worth mentioning is that these films aren't very far apart chronologically.
No, they're not.
2002 and 2005.
Yeah.
It's a pretty similar era as far as movie making.
And I also appreciate how Sahara goes to a location that not very many films go to. In general, in the desert.
Up the...
The Niger River.
Niger, okay.
This is in Africa, right? The whole Bond movie never once stayed in an environment that's colorful.
Mm-hmm.
They went from dark North Korea quickly to Cuba, where there was no action, really, except when they went to a dark underground base.
Right.
And then they later went to the very colorless ice area.
So you mean it just wasn't
colorful?
Saturated enough?
No, I don't mean that it's saturated. I mean that the palette of colors wasn't varied enough.
It was boring.
You wouldn't notice the beauty of the environments.
True. And this film had a lot of that.
This film
had a very pretty
movie.
Yeah. Also, there were just really good callbacks later in the movie to things that had happened earlier. There weren't plot holes or red herrings that just didn't lead anywhere.
Yeah.
Like when Rainn Wilson checks the... Was it algae?
Yeah, it was
algae growing in the river at one point. And then later in the movie, once you've forgotten about it, he brings it back up. And that happens in good movies.
Yeah. This was a coherently written script.
Right. It was just careful filmmaking. They just took care in most every aspect of making this film.
And it's strange.
And that pays off.
It's strange because the overall, some of the science and some of the premise is ridiculous and makes no sense.
Again, Penelope Cruz is probably the weakest part of this film.
Yeah.
Very attractive. Not a great actress.
At least not a great character.
Yeah.
Her character
was
uninteresting.
You can't write her off as an actress altogether, but the character in this maybe didn't suit her that well.
Her character was just uninteresting.
It was sort of like she was just cast because she was Penelope Cruz.
Her character was in the way of the great dynamic between Matthew McConaughey and Steve Zahn.
There was sort of also a forced romance between her and
McConaughey, there was.
Which just didn't really need to be there at all.
Yeah, the best scenes of the movie tended to be scenes where she wasn't there. What this movie is it's a strung together sequence of consistently good action set pieces, right? Where they have an interesting action scene and then they have a scene that connects it to the next interesting action scene.
It was like a Drake's Uncharted video game.
This is the comparison I was going to make. Not Drake's Uncharted. That's Uncharted Drake's Fortune.
Yes.
So The comparison that I wanted to make with this film was that it is eerily similar to the Uncharted games, in that it's based around the fun of each scene, and not necessarily the complexity of the plot, just that the plot is enough to get you to that interesting scene where you have your heroic swashbuckling character.
It's like, we'll do the paperwork to get to the fun part.
Yeah.
Is essentially what this film
this
is.
This would be an excellent video game adaptation. I would say if this was an Uncharted movie, I would be satisfied with it. If that was Nathan Drake instead of Matthew McConaughey. Right?
Wait, Nathan Drake?
Nathan Drake is the main character of Uncharted.
Who should be played by Dylan McDermott or Nathan Fillion.
Yeah.
If they ever make a film adaptation.
I would be disappointed that the movie did poorly, or that the movie didn't succeed. But I think it's a very good representation of the kind of experience that the Uncharted games are, in that it's not something that you want to look in really detailed depth into the motivations of people, or the complexity of the characters, or really the motivations of the antagonist, or anything. It's just, it's a service-level movie with really good action.
So it's a great popcorn film. It's essentially what Die Another Day wasn't.
Yeah.
And it's the same attempt.
Yeah. And it succeeded fully.
We should do this. We should rate these movies that we watch out of 10.
Out of 10.
So let's do it out of 100 so we can be more specific.
That's the same scale.
You're right.
That's the same exact scale.
Well, if we were going to do decimals for the 10 one. Okay, so if... if
why don't we rate it out of 1,000, 10,000, 100,000?
So if Die Another Day was an even 60,
I would rate it a little lower,
but, which is okay. Failing, which is a fail.
Yeah. Well, no, is that? D. That's the lowest score you can get for a
true.
D.
Well,
that's barely passing.
Which I'd say it barely passed. It had some decent parts, and then. Mostly ineffective storytelling.
I would rate it a little lower.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what would you rate it?
I don't know.
Zach, that's... Okay,
I
fine.
Don't like this rating
fine.
Number.
These will be Tom's ratings Tom's of ratings. These films since
and
Zach
I will give a lower
doesn't...
or higher number.
Oh, great. I already love this. So I'd say Die Another Day is about a 60. And if that's a 60, let's put Sahara at an even 75. It's better at what Die Another Day was trying to be, but it's still not really a sophisticated film in general. Great acting, great cinematography, pretty good directing, pretty good dialogue level writing with a bad overarching story.
The dialogue I thought was surprisingly really good for
most
of the movie.
Yeah, it was delightful.
I would probably agree with some score around that. I would say that if you want to watch a film that is a well-made movie that is just entertaining, then this is an excellent choice for that.
If it's the first time that you're hanging out with someone that you're interested in romantically, this would be the right movie to watch.
Would this? I guess.
It's
maybe.
Not political.
It's true.
It doesn't get into any deep thinking.
It's very shallow.
You could both laugh with each other.
As you do.
You won't cry.
You won't.
Unless you're very attached to that one character who died.
Which character?
The other doctor.
Oh, that doctor, yeah. I forgot about him. I obviously wasn't very
you likely
attached.
Won't cry, but you may. Point being, this is the perfect first date film.
Okay. I want to highlight in this movie the action sequences. And I want to point out how these are so good. They're action scenes which are physically possible, but realistically absurd.
Right.
And that is every action scene except for the final one in this movie. Right. The final one's just a fist fight. And that's just realistically okay and physically okay. Right.
And we're fine with that.
There's the scene where they hide under sand and then burst out of the sand and race after a train.
As this was happening, I asked Zach, why did they hide themselves in the earth? And he said, because it looks cool.
It looks cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of this has somewhat flimsy logic behind it, but it's just such a cool thing to do that everyone's okay with it.
Yeah.
Or at least that I'm okay with it.
And I speak for everyone.
And I speak for everyone when I say...
will ever or has ever watched this movie.
The action scenes in this movie are just strangely better than action scenes in good movies. Imagine if one of the action sequences in Inception, one of the four layers of Inception, was one of these action sequences. Like, instead of having the van falling off the bridge, imagine if they had them in a boat, right? And they were doing the explosion of this boat. Right.
Right. Yeah, that would have fit.
In Inception, what they'd be doing, because they have to fall, is he would be like driving the boat and he'd be dropping them off the back of the boat like they do in this movie.
Right. Are we rewriting?
We're rewriting Inception.
A combination film.
A combination film of Inception and this film.
To merge the canon of Sahara with the canon of Inception.
Well, that would be strange in Inception. It would be really entertaining.
Right.
Is my point. And it would work in this contrived manner. It would work. But in this movie, all the action scenes were in this contrived manner, and they worked, and they were very entertaining.
Yeah. I feel like that's probably enough about Sahara. Let's talk about who we want the next Bond to be. Not that this is the Bond episode, but I'm really hoping that it's either Michael Fassbender or Idris Elba.
Okay.
That's not really related to anything we're talking about this week.
Not.
I just wanted to mention that.
I don't really know who I'd want the next Bond actor to be. I mean, that depends how long...
Or
how long Daniel Craig keeps going.
I think he's got maybe one movie after Spectre. I don't know. I shouldn't say that.
I mean, he might have a bunch more. Who knows?
Right. Or I want it to be.
It could be
Emma
some child
Watson.
It could be some child actor right now.
I want it to be Emma Watson as Jamie Bond.
Jamie Bond.
I think that'd be really something.
That would be an interesting move that I feel like they will have to make at some point because they've made 20 something of these movies.
Yeah.
There's a fair chance that they will make some sort of move like that where they will take Bond's character and change them fairly drastically.
Well, the thing is, I saw this photoshopped picture of Idris Elba as Bond, and it's awesome. Check the links below for that. With the conclusion of our discussion about Sahara and James Bond.
Oh, I do want to point out that there's one final thing about Sahara, is the strange plot hole that was just success at the end of the movie. Where they find the... Oh, this is a spoiler, by the way, for the movie. The rest of it...
There haven't been any of
this. The rest
so
of this
far.
Hasn't really been a spoiler because it's just disjointed action seek.
We said that the doctor guy dies.
Oh, that's true. That is.
I said the doctor... I blew it.
I'm retroactively warning viewers, listeners, viewers, that was a spoiler.
Viewers of the webpage.
Viewers of the webpage. Perhaps. Enjoy this webpage. I put a lot of work into it.
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh at your work. That was rude.
It was.
I don't know. It was how you said it, not what you said.
Sure. I see how it is. So anyway, in the end of the movie, they managed to find the thing they were looking for, which is this ironclad ship. And it's conveniently full of gold. They point out how it doesn't make any sense that it's full of gold. They say, how many gold pieces were made? And they're like, I thought it was just 5. They didn't want to have as complicated of a solution as the historical value of this ship. They wanted it to be an actual treasure chest, so they filled it with gold. And it somehow was less distracting because they just kind of admitted it. It was in the middle of an action scene, they admitted it. They're like, this is ridiculous that all this treasure would be here, but it is.
So they lampshade it again.
They lampshade it. They do that in this movie. Bond doesn't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, with the conclusion of the discussion of Sahara, that brings us to this week's Why Can't This Happen? Or Why Doesn't This Happen? Where I ask the smartest guy I know the hardest question I can think of. And this week on Facebook, I saw, which Zach doesn't use, by the way. Zach doesn't use Facebook. I do.
Good luck finding me on Facebook.
I'm going to make you one.
Don't make me a Facebook account.
I saw a video on Facebook of a hoverboard, which was a comparison to Back to the Future. It's not the original Back. It's Back to the Future 2.
Where he goes to the future.
Where he goes to the future.
Which is 2015.
Is it?
Yeah, he goes to 2015.
Where they have hoverboards.
Where they have
where
hoverboards.
Where everyone's
which
riding
why, which
on hover
Which is why they wanted to make a hoverboard. Because we need to make one before he's about to get here. He's about to arrive and we don't have hoverboards
yet. So Lexus apparently has teamed up with some other company and they made this hoverboard. And there's this video, check the links below. I'm doing a lot of that. There's this video, check the link below, of a guy skateboarding around essentially at a skate park on this hoverboard like Marty McFly in the film. And the coolest thing is that it's like venting dry ice the whole time. So not only is it cool because it's a hoverboard, but it gives off steam, which for some reason looked really awesome. So it was like having your own fog machine wherever you hoverboard to. I asked Zach a little bit about this earlier, and he started to give me an explanation. I said, save it, mister. Save it for the podcast. So,
and here we are.
Well, one thing left to do. So, Zach,
so
why can't this happen?
I have actually not seen this video.
And you can't because we don't have Wi-Fi.
And I can't because we have no internet.
Or cellular data because it's very spotty out here.
I can only speculate based on this and the fact that I heard about it a while ago. And
oh, you're all fancy.
And pants. Didn't feel up to watching it. Probably should have watched it, but I didn't. But I still didn't hear anything more than that they made a hoverboard. The only technology we have currently which allows you to do anything of this sort is magnets.
Right. Which was on this Hot Wheels movie, this VHS, that I watched as a child in my grandmother's basement, where they had hover cars, and they explained it with magnets, and I learned something from this episode.
Well,
or maybe it was a film.
I'm happy that you learned.
It was a short one. From that. It was animated. It was Hot Wheels.
Okay.
Okay. And then I had the little car,
if
too,
you
the
remember
plastic.
The name of this, we can put a link to it.
I don't.
Maybe it's on
Google.
I bet it's on YouTube. This Hot Wheels
car, Hot Wheels. Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Pretty cool little movie. But see, this is me remembering this movie as really good, and then if we watched it, it would be
it's gonna
awful.
Be terrible.
Yeah.
Unlike
Sahara.
Yeah. The only technology we have that can make things hover without relying on downward thrust, like a fan or a jet or whatever.
Helicopter.
Or a helicopter. Is magnets. We can make things levitate by having the repulsion of magnets raise them, right? And there are things that do this, like maglev trains technically are hovering.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Cool.
And there are roller coasters that use this too, various things like that. However, in those cases, those trains and roller coasters and whatever are hovering very slightly above the other magnet, right? It only needs to be a really minuscule gap, because the whole purpose is to reduce friction of the movement of these trains or roller coaster or whatever. So all you need to do to reduce the actual friction of two things contacting is to make them not directly contact. You don't need to put like a foot between them or anything.
Mm-hmm.
You only need to put like a millimeter between them. So it doesn't really look like a hoverboard.
And this was, the hoverboard was definitely more than a millimeter off the ground. It was like an inch probably.
Yeah. And so what you need for that...
Well, so let's go back to the question. So the question is,
how does it
Lexus
work?
Said they're not going to produce this for the public. And I asked Zach, why not?
Okay.
And he said...
The answer to that is that it's incredibly expensive.
And, well, obviously.
And infeasible in almost every situation.
And that's the interesting part.
Because it relies on superconductors that we have, which I believe are ceramic.
Hmm.
They're ceramic based.
Like porcelain.
Porcelain, yes.
Wow.
I believe they're ceramic.
That's a superconductor?
Based. It's a superconductor.
So my porcelain dolls collecting dust in the garage that my sisters were gifted at Christmas are actually more valuable than we even thought.
No.
Oh. So my toilet at my house.
No.
That's also porcelain.
But it's not a superconductor.
The porcelain throne.
This special ceramic that I believe they use, this special material... When you cool that material to close to absolute zero, right?
Kelvin.
Absolute zero Kelvin. Very close to that. Then it becomes
a superconductor.
Which
is what?
So a superconductor is a material
that
you...
Explain it like I'm five.
Okay.
Because a lot of five-year-olds listen to our podcast. I don't need it done.
Half of our audience.
But a lot of our audience is five and under.
When you put electricity through a medium, like, say, a wire... Like a copper wire that our electricity goes through, or the power cord that is powering this computer.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Which uses copper wires.
Put it in practical terms, please.
There is resistance from the material, which means some of the energy that would normally just go straight to wherever you want to put it goes to heating up that cord. Right.
So that's why the little thingy in the middle of your power cord is warm when I touch it.
There is a lot of resistance.
This little box,
going on.
What's it called?
A power brick.
That's why it's warm.
It's also doing other things that cause it to be warm. I believe it's like downstepping the voltage or something, which includes resistors, just things that are made to resist.
Okay.
That's also how incandescent light bulbs work, which are the lights that are lighting up this room, because this is an old place. Right. We have no LED lights in here. We have incandescent lights. And an incandescent light relies on resistance of electricity running through a thin filament, and that filament has so much resistance that a lot of the energy, nearly all of it, or a fair amount of it, goes toward heating it up. And when things heat up and get really hot, they output light. When you heat up a metal, right, it gets red hot and starts being bright.
Right, yeah. Like a stove.
And this is an example of that, and that is resistance. So a superconductor is a material that if you pass electricity through it, there is no resistance at all.
So no light, no heat.
You can't directly use a superconductor as a light bulb, I guess.
But you can use it for a cooler purpose, hoverboard.
That's one of the other purposes of superconductors. Superconductors are useful for many things, right? We don't have them, except for these ones that you have to cool with, like, liquid helium.
Which are what are in the hoverboard.
Which is what's in the hoverboard, which is the reason that the hoverboard looks like it has dry ice coming out of it, is because it essentially does. I don't believe it's liquid carbon dioxide, solid carbon dioxide, which is what dry ice is. I think it might be liquid helium or something else that is keeping it really, really cold, which is why it's so expensive, because that's really expensive stuff to get. And it's so infeasible because that's really infeasible. You would need to constantly have a supply of that.
So
you can keep it as a superconductor.
So how long could you hover around on this?
As long as your supply can keep it cold.
So all week?
No. Probably minutes.
So in this video, it looks like he's just skating around all day.
Yeah.
But really, he's only doing it for a minute or so at a time.
And probably. They're probably just refilling it, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's still very cool.
It's cool. The other problem with this is that it's a magnet, and I believe it repels off of magnetic surfaces. There's a weird property of it that allows it to hover above a metal surface. I believe the other surface has to be a magnet, but an example of superconductors is that they have like a superconducting disc and like a metal strip, and the disc hovers on it, and they can like flick the disc around, and it just slides right above the metal. Because of the weird magnetic property of superconductors, because it's essentially a weird electromagnet.
I have so much trouble wrapping my head around this kind of thing.
It's a weird concept.
To our listeners, if you're lost, you're not alone.
It's a weird concept. I can't explain it fully because I don't understand it fully, because I would have to look it up to figure out exactly how this works. But what I know, and you can look this up, we'll have like a link to the superconductor Wikipedia page. What the effect is that above specific materials, superconductors will hover. Right.
So how's it skating around a concrete skate park?
Because, as far as I know, the skate park is not concrete.
Oh, you don't think so?
Did it look concrete in the video?
As far as I can remember.
My guess, without having seen this video.
And if I'm wrong, cut this whole part.
And without being able to look it up, is that they took a magnetic strip and paved a thin layer of concrete over it so it would look like a standard skate park.
And faked the whole video.
Not faked, because it's a real interaction. It's not like they did CGI.
Right.
But it is disingenuous.
Right, because they have people like around the skate park like in awe of it, which makes it seem like it's a regular skate park.
Superconductor levitating devices can only levitate over specific materials that are not common enough to make it a hoverboard.
Oh.
You would have to have a hoverboard track.
So you couldn't, like, skate from your house to the bookstore.
Unless there was a track specifically made so that you could do that, or we repaved all of our roads with the right material.
If we're going to repave our roads, we're doing solar freaking roadways.
No. Solar roadways is a bad idea. Solar roadways is...
I knew this would set you off.
Solar roadways is an idea that on the surface level sounds like a good idea, but the infrastructure required and the upkeep required for it
is just so much
more expensive. The cost of putting it in place, maintaining it, or making it, putting it in place, and maintaining it is so much higher than something as simple as, say, putting shades over the top of the road that had solar panels on them. Right?
Right.
That it is just never going to happen. These roadways have so much complexity behind them, which is the selling point. The selling point is that they can do all sorts of things. They can be like, they can have lights on them that are
like
individually
a
controlled.
Paradiso event on the highway.
They carry like internet lines or something too, right? They have like a Wi-Fi network too. They're very complicated.
We have
they're...
Wi-Fi in cars. We don't need Wi-Fi on the road.
They're overcomplicated.
Except for hitchhikers. Would appreciate that.
So they're equivalent to a Kickstarter project, which is what they are, right?
Right.
They're on like Indiegogo or something. They have the same problem that so many of these Kickstarter projects have, is that they just want to stuff as many features into this thing as possible. And the problem with the solar roadways is, even at the most basic level, which is just a solar panel and nothing else, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're infeasible. But if you add in all of the other features that they just want to throw in with it, it just becomes ridiculous.
Right.
Every highway maintaining road worker would have to be an electrical engineer. We should use solar panels. We shouldn't repave all of our roads with solar panels that are hard to maintain, that are expensive to make.
It also looked terrible after just regular wear and tear.
Yeah.
That tires driving.
That's the other thing too, is they argued that they wouldn't get scuffed up and scratched.
Really?
Which I don't know whether or not that would be true, but what I do
know, you couldn't spit your gum out onto them,
is that they would be covered by stuff, by snow, by rubber from tires.
They were going to be heated so that snow couldn't stay on them.
Oh, it's just another stupid feature that they've added.
No, but that'd be good, because then you wouldn't have to plow them. At least that was
so. Not only does every one of these little hexagonal glass devices blocks, not only does every one of them have a solar panel and a set of LED lights of various colors.
For some reason, that seems like the least necessary.
And it also apparently has a heating element in it.
Yeah.
As well
they
as
should use incandescent lights. It's
so overall, that solar roadways idea on the surface level is interesting. But when you get into it, it just becomes absurd.
Okay, so now we're going to get into the MISC section of this episode, where we're going to talk about something that Tesla is doing. They've created this really cool thing, which could have been a why isn't this a thing topic, but we're just
going to... But it's now a thing.
It is now a thing. We're just going to graze over it as well. So during the revelation of the Model S dual motor, Elon offhandedly mentioned that, well, he was talking about how the car will, if you get out in the driveway, it will park.
Oh, and by the way, this Elon is Elon Musk, the founder of the electric car company Tesla, as well as the space rocket company SpaceX, and the online payment company PayPal.
And one of the founders of SolarCity. His cousins have that, but anyway.
Anyway, he's very rich. He's very influential in technological development.
Elon is perhaps the most influential active pioneer today. So when he was revealing the Tesla Model S dual motor, he sort of offhandedly remarked while talking about how if you get out of the car in your driveway, it will park itself in your garage. He was saying, and then I don't even want owners to have to walk into the garage and plug it in. I sort of want there to be this... And he said Metal Gear Solid articulating arm, which I don't know what that's a reference.
Metal Gear Solid is
that arcade game?
No, it's not. You're thinking of Metal Slug.
Well, I don't know.
Metal Slug
is the font was really hard to read on the top of that game.
That's Metal Slug.
It's like the four characters where you just run through and shoot guys.
That's Metal Slug.
Okay.
So Metal Gear Solid.
Metal Gear Solid.
Metal Gear Solid is also a series of video games.
Okay, that's probably my confusion.
But these are known for being some of the earliest video games that focused extensively on story and cutscenes, to the point where they will have multiple movies worth of unplayable cutscenes in them.
Unplayable?
Like 20 hours of parts where you're not playing.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Yeah. I think Metal Gear Solid 4 had like a huge, and Metal Gear Solid 5 is coming out soon.
So why did he mention this?
In Metal Gear Solid games, the title Metal Gear Solid comes from, and I haven't played the game, so this is a my outward understanding, I've been meaning to play them, comes from the Metal Gears, which are big mechs in the game.
What's a mech?
A mech is a big robot.
Okay.
That you can ride in, usually.
See, I feel like that was on Metal Slug, too. It's kind of like on Broforce, that thing that you can hop into.
That is probably also Metal Slug. It's a common trope.
Okay. That's on Titanfall, too. That is Titanfall.
That is Titanfall. It's a mech action game.
Okay.
Mech fighting game.
So he offhandedly mentions this Metal Gear Solid articulating arm that he wants to make.
Somewhere in the games, there's an articulating arm.
That will snake
itself. That works the same way, yeah.
Up to the car and of its own accord, plug into the car. And that seemed like a joke. Like, as I watched this, I was like, okay, well, he's...
It's like, I want the cord to plug itself into the
car.
Yeah,
exactly. And it seemed like, he's messing with us. That's not going to happen. Well, then about a week ago, it did happen. And Tesla released a video of this prototype. It's an arm, like, bending down and finding the charger port and plugging into it without any human help. Do you think it could be a hoax and someone's, like, controlling it? Or do you think they wouldn't do that?
Someone could be controlling it, and I'm sure that was the initial process, was making the mechanical thing that could do that.
Right.
Which isn't all that complicated. It's just kind of a weird design to have that, like, snake-like robot thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I highly doubt someone was controlling it, because it's Tesla, mostly.
So you don't think they'd be messing with everyone?
It's not April Fool's, so they're not.
True.
There is one day of the year where every company and every organization is allowed to just blatantly lie about whatever they're doing.
Right. It's April 1st.
Then that's April 1st. And people are doing this around the world now, like countries where April Fool's isn't a thing. Like it got really popular in like Japan.
That's
right?
Awesome.
Because it's a great idea of the non-serious announcement day.
Yeah, Tesla did some like Tesla watch thing this year.
Yeah.
Where it was like a model of Big Ben on a band that you wear like a watch. Anyway.
I like that Google always has good ones. I remember one of theirs a long time ago was before they were an internet service provider with Google Fiber.
Yeah.
They said that they were going to provide internet through the existing sewage system, through the existing sewer system.
Oh,
and
no.
The way you would do it is you'd buy this little device that you would flush down your toilet, and you plug the other end into your router, and you'd get Google, whatever they called it, internet.
That reminds me of the thing when people thought for a minute, until people started posting YouTube videos of this, they thought you could charge your iPhone by putting it into the microwave.
Oh,
and
man.
And then people made videos of this happening. Oh, it's great.
People are stupid.
Check the links below.
There have been a number of those cases where people circulate images of like tech tricks that you can do. Life hacks is another example of a
term. I think
term.
That's an actual word now. I'm pretty sure that's in the dictionary.
It is, I think.
I think it was one of the words of the year recently.
I'm kind of disappointed.
Is it even one word?
No, it's two words. It's a term.
Yeah.
But some people make it one word. So of life hacks, which are just traps for people who are easily fooled into doing things.
Terrible.
Oh, it's really awful. Some of the worst ones.
You know what? There was that like anti-life hack on Fight Club, where they repaint the billboard that says, "Did you know pouring old motor oil on your lawn could, I don't know,
yeah,
is healthy for your lawn or something."
Oh, and there have been some bad ones too. Like I know that 4chan, you know that website?
Yeah,
they've convinced people to mix ammonia and bleach to speed up the cleaning process.
What's that?
Which is the mixture that creates a potent poison.
Wait, that's not funny though. That's just,
yeah,
that's just murder. That's mass murder.
That's just murder. Yeah.
Well, that's,
they've done that though.
Joke's over.
Yeah.
Joke's over, kids. Not funny. Don't put that on your website.
People think it's funny when
people think it's funny when they drop dead.
No, people think it's funny when no one actually does it, but then when someone actually does it, hopefully they realize.
Is ammonia even easy to obtain? I feel like that's,
no, it is. It's a cleaning supply.
Really?
it should be common knowledge for anyone that's using cleaning supplies to not mix ammonia and bleach.
Yeah.
Because those are two separate cleaning supplies, but if you mix them together, you create poison gas.
Jeez. Oh, no.
And it's fairly common in the U.S. for people to do this accidentally, where they thought that they were going to, like, speed up the cleaning, or they're like, I have...
Two steps at once.
I want to do what ammonia does and what bleach does at the same time. Let's just put them both on the clothes.
What's ammonia do?
I have no idea what ammonia does. I just know not to mix it with bleach.
Okay. So anyway, back to the snake arm that Tesla
The snake
released.
Arm.
That is one of our missed topics for the episode. And it comes from yours truly, Zach, not me.
So in my elementary school. In my younger days. There were two classes that I had that were the extracurricular, even though I was still in school, that were the more artsy classes. Because this was elementary school. I had my one teacher who taught me every subject, right? Except for PE, which was taught in PE, right? Physical education, where we did running and whatnot. And then the other two classes were art and music. And the art teacher would come into your classroom and do art. And the music class, you would go to this separate little small room and...
this closet, essentially.
It was a small room. It was a small classroom. And we would listen to and talk about and learn music.
Did you ever play an instrument in this class?
We did. We played recorders, like every child does, apparently.
The most important instrument.
There are professional recorder players, and they sound pretty good.
Have you heard the 20th Century Fox theme yes. played on a recorder?
I showed that to you. I'm going to put that as an example of a poorly played recorder, and then I'll have to find like a one that someone played well.
Which is an oxymoron.
So in this class, in this music class, both of these classes, by the way, were almost immediately in my school history, were canceled and the teachers were fired or moved elsewhere. Because
maybe disposed of.
Disposed of. Because the district determined that these classes were not essential.
They were expendable.
And the school I went to was incredibly poor, right?
I just want to take this back to the plastic surgeon in Cuba. These teachers were the expendable types.
You could make DNA from them.
You could salvage DNA from them.
And then give it to Conan O'Brien. So the district, or my school, whoever, some of the higher-ups got rid of these classes after, like, my second year. Like, second grade, which is, I guess, my third year. Right?
You went to first grade twice.
I went to kindergarten.
No, that's fancy pants.
Okay. Oh, yeah. We have our German words here.
Is that a
German word?
Wow.
Yeah.
What about first grade? Is it a German word?
No, it's not, unfortunately.
It's an English
word. So, anyway, the higher-ups, the powers to be, decided that these two classes were, or these two teachers and all of their classes, were inessential and should just be gotten rid of for budgetary reasons, I believe. And so after second grade, I did not have a music class. But I've got to say, that music class had a surprisingly significant effect on me later on, which it didn't have while I was there. I remember going to the class and not really thinking much of it. I went to the class and it was just another regular class. But the art class had very little effect on me at all.
That's that John Mulaney quote. It was a music appreciation class that we never appreciated.
Yeah. I didn't appreciate this music appreciation class.
Right.
So every class period, we would come in, and the first thing we would do is we'd sit down and listen to music. And it would be usually like classical music or some sort of almost always instrumental music that is liked by music majors. Right. People that are studying the fundamentals of music, that they're studying classical music and like the beauty of all of this stuff, music that they would like. So it's lots of somewhat famous classical pieces. And in fact, most of the music that was played in that class, or a lot of it, when I first got the ability to get my music on my own, I didn't really listen to the radio. So I knew the music that my dad listened to in the car.
Same.
And the music
I knew what your dad listened to.
Yeah. And the music my mom listened to that most of it I didn't like. Right?
Same.
And the music I listened to in this class. This class, it had a surprisingly significant effect on my music library because it was some of the first songs I put into the library, and I've been maintaining and adding to that library ever since. So some of the songs that have been in there for the longest were these songs that I listened to in that class. So I kind of associate that class with music that I like, and not necessarily because it's good, but just because I've known it for so long.
It's nostalgic.
That it's nostalgic, yes. On special occasions in this class, we would listen to whatever the theme of the occasion is, music appropriate to that theme. So on Christmas, we would listen to like Christmas music. On Halloween, we would listen to some Halloween track that was weird. But on St. Patrick's Day...
Can you just give me an example real quick of a Halloween track that's weird?
So it was a spooky music track that was full of spooky sound effects and wasn't necessarily music. Visualize, because it's audio. An audio track which is someone reading a Halloween poem with like a...
Is Thriller a Halloween track? There's the narration at the end.
Oh, yeah, okay. So yeah, that narration part. Okay. So think of it like a track like that, right? Where they have a narration of that style of reading a Halloween poem, a spooky poem, right? And they have like scary sound effects playing of some witch sound and bats flying by.
I hate this.
And a wolf.
Go back to what you were saying before, right? I asked for this.
So that was what we listened to on Halloween, and she turned down the lights and
try
to scare all these elementary schoolers.
No.
On St. Patrick's Day, we would listen to Irish music, right? Some sort of Irish thing. Because St. Patrick's Day is the holiday where it's just celebrate the Irish.
Celebrate Irish people existing.
Yeah. I don't remember all but one of them because it was different every year. The Halloween one was the same every year, but the St. Patrick's Day one was different every year. But I only remember one track for whatever reason.
Right.
I don't know why I remember certain things from when I was younger, but I do. And this track was one of them.
I mean, that's fair. That's like me remembering that Hot Wheels movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's weird that I remember that specific one.
Yeah. So what I remember of this track was that it was very fast. Like the lyrics were incredibly fast. And I remember that, like, that was one of the gimmicks of the song that our teacher introduced. She's like, I found this song and the lyrics are really fast. Isn't that fun? Because it's kids, so everything
Listen
has to be
up,
fun.
Kids.
It was a really fast track. And it was very Irish. Like, it was an Irish accent. And it had like
aggressively Irish.
It had like the Irish violin and everything. Right?
That exists.
With fiddle type noise in the
song. Oh, fiddle.
It's a violin. A violin is a fiddle.
It's an Irish violin.
Yeah.
Ninjas are just Japanese burglars.
They sort of are. Yeah.
They're not.
They're Japanese cat burglars.
Cat burglars? What's that?
Like the Western version of a ninja. Someone who dresses up in like all black and then sneaks into places.
Okay. Someone once said that to me. They said, ninjas are just Japanese burglars. And I wasn't sure how I felt about it, but it stuck with me.
It's a good quote. It's not fully accurate.
It's funny.
But it's funny. Yeah.
And I respect the person who said this.
So anyway, I remember that this song was Irish, right? As would make sense for St. Patrick's Day. And I remember that there were specific lyrics. I remember the name Johnny Do, like Johnny D-E-W, right? And the lyrics, I have the sky, I have the moon. This was what I remember of it. And I didn't look this song up. I heard it once. And then that was it. And then it was several years later until I finally got access to music on the internet. I got access to the internet pretty late compared to most people. Right?
Probably later than you, actually. I don't think I started using the internet as a tool until I was at least in junior high.
I used it before then. But anyway.
I was late to the party. I used BurgerKing.com before then because it had Chinese checkers and a couple other things.
So I didn't look up this song until like fifth grade, which was my final year of elementary school, if not after. It might have been in middle school.
Right.
And by look up the song, I mean try to find this song.
Because and you didn't have much to go on here because you have like fast Johnny Do.
I have fast song. Irish Johnny Do, something about the sky and the moon. Right? And that's all I knew about this song. So it was like fifth or sixth grade, and I'm trying to look up this song, and I can find all the other ones, right? Because I remember their titles. All the other classical music, you can't just search classical music because it doesn't have lyrics. So the memorable part was the titles.
Right.
So I remember, like, an example is one of the songs we listened to was this classical piece called Carnival of the Animals, the March of the Lion. I like the song. It's another one of those nostalgia songs. And I remember that it was a classical song and something about a carnival and a lion, and that's easy to find. Right?
Right.
That's like the only result.
You know,
not the way, that's the way it was with most of the music that I looked up. But this song I couldn't find. I tried every combination of how I knew to search things, which is how you use the internet, essentially.
Right.
And how I've always used the internet. And I eventually had to give up, which is rare for me when I'm looking up things online. And that was in like fifth or sixth grade. In the almost 10 years after that, or so, like 10, 11 years, whatever it is, up until now, I have repeatedly tried to look this song up. Every once in a while, I will be reminded of this song. Maybe it's the word do. Maybe it's if someone combines sky and moon together, I will think, oh, what is that song? Right?
That seems like it must frequently plague your mind, because oftentimes you would mention the moon and the sky together.
No, it's only when you have them directly connected.
Okay.
And it's that order specifically, like the sky and the moon. It's the phrase sky and the moon.
Would set it off.
Would be something that would remind me of it.
So this isn't like every day of your life.
No, this is like every...
Sit there and think about the song.
This is like 6 months to a year in between.
Okay. More frustrating,
in between,
though.
Oh, it's...
Because when it comes back up, you're like, I can't believe I didn't resolve this already.
Every time. It's like, it's worse every time. Because I try to think of this song that I couldn't remember. And I think I'm better at using Google now. Things are really well documented. That people have been documenting songs for years, and it's got to be there now, right? So it was my thought
every time, year after year,
the thought was, I can find this song now, until I eventually had to give up.
Right.
Because I just couldn't find this song. I'd put in like an hour and a half into Googling this, and then I'd be like, oh, I can't find it. This song doesn't exist. Right. And I was wondering
maybe she wrote it.
How she got access to this song that doesn't exist. I started to think of reasons, like maybe it's a very small band that never put it online, right? Okay. And she was like friends with the band.
That could be. That would make
that
sense.
That was my general assumption for this, but I still wanted to find it, right? Because I thought it's probably been put online, and there's a fair chance that that's not the case, and that it exists somewhere on the internet, because nearly everything exists somewhere on the internet. So I've been doing this for years and years, every time, until like a week and a half ago, when I was watching like a Let's Play on YouTube.
What's that?
A Let's Play is a video series where entertaining people do commentary over a video game that they're playing.
Oh.
You would like these because you like watching games.
Video games?
You like watching people play games.
Right.
This is essentially watching people play games. And if you find a good one that you like, it's watching people that are entertaining on their own do something entertaining. Right? And so a lot of them tend to be sort of like podcasts, but with consistent content to talk about,
mm-hmm.
which makes it, I would say, probably a lot easier to edit than this podcast is, because there are frequent periods of this podcast, listeners don't know about this, where we are struggling to talk about something and we have to collect our thoughts on whatever the subject is, or we have to retry saying something, or whatever the case. So I was unsuccessful in finding this song until a week ago, or like a week and a half ago, when I was watching a Let's Play on YouTube, and one of the people talking made this offhand comment saying, I've got the sky, I've got the moon. It was like he was making up song lyrics. It was a strange situation. It was a Let's Play of like Resident Evil 3.
That's an old one.
Which is an old game.
So why were you watching this?
Because the people were entertaining. So like,
who was it?
This. So, okay. The group that does this Let's Play is...
NSYNC.
No.
Oh.
No.
You said it was a group.
This started out as a pair of people doing videos that were initially on Machinima, which is how I found them, which is a YouTube channel.
I know that one.
Yeah. That collects a lot of other YouTube channels' content. Right. And I went to their own channel and looked at their own stuff, which was just, there was a lot more of it, right? They would do videos under the title Two Best Friends Play something, right?
Maybe we should have titled this Two Best Friends Talk.
And then they added two more people, and now they have do things under Super Best Friends Do Whatever.
Okay.
Because they like video games, so they do the Super right. as the sequel. So this was like Two Best Friends, because there's still two of them. So Two Best Friends Play Resident Evil 3, probably episode like 4 or 5 or something. I don't know.
Oh, so it's old.
No, it came out recently. They play old games.
Oh, yeah. Weird. Okay.
It's fun. Anyway. one of them was...
It'd be kind of frustrating to play too old of a game.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Especially like not like a classically old game like side-scrolling Mario, but just a game that's like limited, like the first Assassin's Creed, trying to go back and play that after playing later iterations.
People can do that, but generally Let's Players don't do that. So there's a channel called Nice and Games. I don't know why it's called that.
Okay.
That has well-produced videos. And there's also another channel called Accursed Farms, where there's a series of videos called Ross's Game Dungeon, where he plays old games that are forgotten, like that, that are just usually not great. But he makes a well-produced video talking about
them,
about their history and about how they're not great, but about the interesting characteristics of them. Like, there's one video of this really strange brick breaker game, which is the one where you're moving the paddle along
Tetris.
The bottom. Not like Tetris. It's the one where you slide the paddle back and forth and hit a ball What's off of bricks.
Is that just Brick Breaker?
The original one was called Arkanoid. Not the original, but the first
asteroids.
Big one.
Asteroids.
Not asteroids. But anyway, he found this weird one. So old games used to do this thing called shareware, where they would come out with one of the games, and then if you beat the game, it would say, pay for the second half or the sequel, right? Which was just the second half of the game. So that way, if you liked it enough, you would buy it, and then they would mail you a CD of the game, because this was old school, right? You could get like the first half on the internet, but then to prevent people from pirating it, right? And to save bandwidth, they would like mail you the CD of the second half.
Right.
So this was a brick breaker game that he was playing that was just full of weird imagery, like skulls every once in a while, like this like disturbing face every once in a while.
Okay.
Right? And then he beats it and he can't find the sequel, and he can only find it mentioned existing once, even though it says pay us for this part. And he managed to get in contact with the guy that made it
right.
like 30 years ago and got a floppy disk of it, and had the floppy disk sent to his dad, who still had a floppy disk player, who then took the data off the floppy disk, and he was able to get this game back. And the first one too, which is also lost to history, because it was like the second and third one. The first one came out and was also lost to history, but he got them from the creator on floppy disks.
Wow.
And made a video about it, which was very interesting. And then he also released them online and got permission to release them publicly. So now that game can be archived forever.
Sweet.
And is no longer lost.
That's awesome.
Which, that's a great channel. That's a channel that does videos on games that aren't necessarily good, but it's interesting enough content to make up for it.
That's pretty cool. Okay, let's get back to Johnny Depp.
On this Let's Play, I hear what are close to the lyrics of the song. And in fact, I always remembered it as I have the sky, I have the moon, right?
Mm-hmm. So that's what you'd been Googling.
That's what I've been Googling. But what they said in their made-up lyrics was something like, I've got the sky, I've got the moon.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows, they may have been referencing the song. Because when I Googled this, I finally got a result. A singular result, which was this fan-made, user-submitted lyrics website, which had lyrics to a song.
So it's not like AZ lyrics. It's like fan-made.
These are like user-submitted lyrics to songs. I actually looked this up on the Internet Archive, which is a great website, which archives the internet and takes snapshots of pages.
That exists?
Yes. And you can look at like time periods. So I looked back, and the most recent snapshot of that page was like a year ago.
Huh.
And it didn't have the lyrics that it currently has. Someone had changed the lyrics recently to what are, in actuality, incorrect lyrics, but are the lyrics that I remembered and allowed me to find this song.
Okay.
So someone else had misremembered or misheard these lyrics.
So
in
again,
the same
by
way
divine
that I
providence, the Lord smiles on Zach.
By this random chance situation.
And Zach.
This just
is close, ever closer to finding the elusive Johnny Dew song.
So, yes. And I realized when I was looking at these lyrics that I had so many of the lyrics wrong, right? I thought it said, I have the sky, I have the moon. It's actually, I've got the sky, I've got the road, and not the moon, right?
Which is interesting that you could get those two confused.
But then again, I'm remembering it from the one time I heard it in second grade.
Just like so 12 years ago. Words.
12, it sounds similar on the song. I will defend that. And so the other lyric I got wrong, which is I think the major problem preventing me from finding this song, was I remember Johnny Dew, but I assumed that it was spelled Johnny, like just the name Johnny.
Right.
D-E-W, right? Like dew on grass. And well, those two words together exist online. Not a single one of the results in any of the searches I ever had was of a song of this type. There even was another song that had these lyrics, I believe. But it wasn't this song. And I also tried, like, Johnny D.O., like the other do that I know, the other word that is do that I know.
Thank you for phrasing it like that.
Right. And that also had no results. The actual way it's spelled is Johnny D.H.U.
Right. Because it's Gaelic.
Because it's Gaelic. I guess, even though it's English.
Probably.
It's Gaelic inspired. Once I had found the name of this song, right, I was able to Google it, listen to like 3 YouTube videos, and then I found the one, which was the song that I listened to. And I was able to find the artist, because this is a song that is sung by multiple artists, right? And I was able to find the artist that sang the song that I had listened to. The artist of the song is Gaelic Storm, right? Which is what great artist, anyway.
Backing my prior theory.
Which is some, like, they're a somewhat modern Irish folk band, right?
Okay.
And the name of the song is The Beggar Man.
Well, I'm a little beggar man, I'm beginning a teen, a 15 score or more, and a little lily green, and I know him from the leafy, from the basin to the zoo, and I know him by the name of old Johnny Dew. Of all the things going on, the begging is the best, but when a man is tired, he can sit down and rest, he can beg for his dinner, he's nothing else to do, when I come around the corner with his old record.
Gaelic Storm reminds me a lot of another band called Celtic Thunder, because of the title. Yeah,
those are like synonyms.
A strange thing with this song is that I currently am not sure whether or not I like this song for the song that it is.
Oh, no.
Or that I like it because of the relief that I get that I found it after 12 years of searching.
Oh, no.
Well, 12 years.
Let's put it this way. If it came up on your shuffle, would you listen to it?
I might.
I bet you would.
So okay. Think about this. I've been thinking about this song for 12 years, right?
Unable to figure
out. Unable to listen to it. So I've got to make up for that.
So it's like you've been in a prison of sorts, and you've just been thinking about this one girl the whole time you've been in there. And now you're finally out, and you can be with her. And I'm asking you, if you saw her on the street, which is your shuffle mode on your music player.
My shuffle mode, I like on the street.
Would
it's just
you,
random people
would
appearing
you talk to
before
her
me.
Or not? This is a very forced
this is a weird
analogy,
metaphor.
But go with it.
Okay.
I'm dumb for even asking if you would talk to her. Of course you would talk to her. At least.
At least
if
to
not,
figure out her name. So I can remember her name. Because
so
I've been
you
trying to
find
her name
again
for the last 12 years.
Yeah. Can you imagine being in prison for 12 years trying to think of one person's name and not being able to. Oh, wow, I really.
It's like
I feel for you.
It's like if you thought of the name, you could be released.
It is. It's like, they're like, do you remember? And you're just guessing.
Yeah.
Randomly.
I would never guess this.
Beggar Man.
The Beggar Man? Come on.
It's not a good song. It's bad.
Fine.
In my opinion. I'm Irish, and I don't like this song very much.
And you represent Ireland.
And I speak for the entirety of the people when I say it's not a good song.
Okay. I see how it is. I don't know. I can't be unbiased in this because I'm so attached to this song now that I'm so proud of myself that I finally found this song.
This reminds me of, did you ever watch Batman Beyond?
The cartoon series?
This was the cartoon.
Not really.
Where Bruce Wayne was old, and the new Batman was a young boy. He wasn't a young boy. He was a young man named Terry. Great with names. And he was just young, you know, and he was getting beat up outside Wayne Manor, and Bruce comes down and beats up the people who are beating
him
up.
Do you want to be Batman?
With his cane. And then he takes him in the house, and he's like, whoa, you were Batman? We need Batman. And he's like, look at me, I'm 70. And Terry's like, I'll do it. And he has this cool new suit. I remember this being an awesome show.
Okay.
We've touched on this a lot today. It's kind of been a recurring theme of misremembering the past.
And nostalgia not living up to what you'd expect.
Yeah. Well, that was the case tenfold with Batman Beyond. I thought this was the best show ever. When I purchased it at Walmart, I saw it and I was like, of course. I bought the entire first season for, I think, like $15.
Mm.
And I remember taking it to Skylar's house, a friend of ours. He may be on the show at a later date. Stay tuned. People are going to listen this whole season. They'll just be like, what is Skylar showing up?
They're all on the edge of their seats.
Yeah.
Just anticipating this mysterious Skylar.
It could be a guy or a girl.
Yeah.
Who knows?
You've already said he.
It's a guy. So I remember taking it to his house and trying to watch the first episode that night, watching the first 10 minutes and having to turn it off because it was so bad and I wanted to preserve the memory of it, as it were. And I remember he was having a yard sale the next day and I tried to resell it for half the price because I just wanted to salvage something of this terrible decision.
I
want to
watch the show now.
No one bought it. I have it still. Oh. I tried to yard sale it and no one wanted it.
Well, maybe I can borrow
because
it.
Because they were not as easily swayed by their misremembrance of the show.
I will say, though, I know what you mean, but I never considered this song to be good. I just considered this song to be a challenge to find.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. It's awesome you did that.
I have this attitude when I'm trying to do something that is difficult to do, but I think can be realistically done, that I will go to absurd lengths.
I will kill a man to find Beggar Man.
So far, that has not been necessary.
But I'm not ruling it out.
I will go to ridiculous lengths to get this thing that I want to do done.
It's almost midnight. Why do we always do this so late? We never record a podcast around lunchtime.
Get more interesting conversation late at night.
It's like a natural form of impairing judgment.
Yeah, yeah. I did have a friend growing up named Kyler.
I had a basketball coach named Kyler.
Really? Because I've never met another Kyler in my life.
I always thought Kyler was a funny name because it's like Kyle mixed with Skyler.
Yeah.
It's like the parents couldn't commit one way or the other. They're like, let's just make it Kyler.
I never met another Kyler in my life. Until a like soccer game in like fifth grade, right? When I was playing against a kid and they yelled Kyler. And it turns out it was the same Kyler. So
really?
I still have not met another Kyler. Who was my friend before I even went to school.
I think there was a Tyler in my elementary school and then a Kyle. And I was like, you know what you get if you mix those names?
Tile.
That's what I thought.
Tyler.
I just realized how funny of a name Tyler is, because what? It's just a profession.
Smith.
You're a Tyler.
So Smith is a Smith.
Smith is a last name.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of names are professions.
Tyler is a funny one, though, because that's a modern name.
But it's not spelled
like... No one in the Bible is named Tyler.
Like Tyler, it's spelled with a Y.
Still.
I don't think it has that meaning.
It doesn't. Just phonetically, it's funny.
Oh, okay.
Because it's Tyler, one who tiles.
I bet there's a Tyler the Tyler.
I'm sure. There's got to be.
And I hope that he uses that title.
That's probably like his clever name of his tiling business.
Yeah, I hope so.
Tyler's Tiling.
Tyler the Tyler.
Link to Tyler's Tiling. Oh, gosh. Well, it sounds like we've got nothing to talk about anymore, right?
Do we have nothing to talk about?
It seems like it.
I mean, we could pick random other topics to talk about. You want me to tell some random story?
I'm sick of this. I'm sick of it. No, you've told enough random stories for this episode.
But I put in so much detail into my my quest to find the elusive song. Once again, I'm really proud of myself for finding this song.
Okay, I guess that's it then.
You have been listening to the second episode of Tallcast.
Yeah, thanks for hanging out.
Bye.
How did you get so awkward at the end?
Bye.
See you later.
Thanks for listening. This has been Tallcast.
Know that they went.
Tallcast is a seasonal project recorded summers in Yakima, Washington, for a bass studio with Tom and Zach.
And it's over the fields with my pack on my back, and over the fields with my great heavy sack, with the holes in my shoes and my toes peeping through. Zipper zipper da 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 for all of Johnny Doo. I must be going to bed for just getting late at night. Well, the fire's all rigged and out goes the light. Now for the story of the old Rickidoo. Skeleton covered with the app from old Johnny Doo.